Hello, Stephen Mayne.
Hello, Lindy Burns.
Did you know, Stephen, that the reason why we're in such disarray financially is because of AC/DC?
Every time they put out an album, the British economy goes into recession.
That's exactly right.
Somewhere. Yes.
That's exactly right. You hadn't taken that into consideration, had you?
No, I have to admit I hadn't thought of that. But, you know, some clever sub-editor or journalist somewhere has come up with a nice angle, which is, lightens a very serious situation.
It does. You've had a very big few days, 10 AGMs in 4 working days. We'll get to some of the guts of that because there's been some interesting things transpiring at those meetings. But I just want to get a quick word from you about your view of the frozen mortgage trusts, Colonial First freezing, AXA, etc., and the government's response. What do you think should be happening there?
Well, I don't think they should be guaranteeing or bailing out market-linked funds. I think that's a fair call. Clearly, the government erred in the unlimited guarantee by going so far so early without the detail. It would have been far better to wait back for as long as possible and go for an absolutely minimalist guarantee. But also, as for some of the really big ones, like Colonial First State and AXA, they're owned and managed by massive financial giants, the Commonwealth Bank and AXA. I think they should be actually providing the liquidity to their own funds. I mean, why can't the Commonwealth Bank, which claims it's got $60 billion of liquidity, slip a couple of bill to Colonial, it's one of its funds it controls, and just manages the cash flows? So people want to take their money out. Because it is amazing that the Commonwealth Bank has frozen anyone's money in any form. And I find that very surprising that they are not just stepping up themselves.
And just speaking of what a mortgage fund actually is, how does that differ from, say, just your average savings account?
Oh, well, a savings account is just your own cash in the bank earning interest, whereas a mortgage fund is linked to the valuation of mortgages, and it's higher yield. So people take the risk. They chase the high yield, and funds have been frozen many times before in the late 80s, early 90s, the whole estate mortgage era. There was a whole raft of frozen funds, and you know, people should know that that these things are often illiquid, and they've been frozen funds before, and if you chase the yield, there are risks associated with that. So, I mean, that said, I do, you know, obviously it's been exacerbated by the government's position, and it's tricky now because once you let the genie out of the bottle and you start slapping your guarantee around willy-nilly, then everyone left out from the party gets left without a dance partner.
They're at the door and, like this.
Let me in with a guarantee. So, like a really tricky situation. But with the dollar crashing to sort of the 60 cents, the government had to sort of throw their guarantee around just to keep that sort of foreign capital coming in because we're so dependent on foreign capital and foreign loans. So they had to do it, but just the scale of the deposit guarantee was too much and mishandled.
How low will the dollar go?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably irrationally low, like so many. We're being grouped in with South American economies, where just high risk commodities, too much debt, $60 billion current account, $1 trillion household debt. So they're just being grouping us in with everyone else, whereas we probably shouldn't be. We are actually a bit stronger than that. Peter Costello was at the press club today. Once again, you know, talking about how strongest country in the world. I mean, clearly we're not the strongest country in the world. We have massive debts. We're highly dependent on foreign capital, and our currency has been crashed by 30%. That is not the best, strongest economy in the world, Mr. Costello, who seems to be living on another planet. But 60 cents seems a bit overdone, and we're not Ukraine. We're not Iceland. We won't be going to the IMF asking for $25 billion, like so many of these sort of second-tier nations are. We are G20 caliber in that regard. We won't be needing the corporate IMF world handout.
Just have to convince everybody else internationally that that's the case. More with you in a moment, Stephen. Ian Henderson, good evening.
Hi, Lindy.
How are you?
I might even have some breaking news for you at the moment.
Far away.
The Prime Minister will announce tonight some measures aimed at helping overcome some of the problems in the financial market that have led to billions of dollars being frozen. We'll cut to the chase here. What is it? Kevin Rudd will announce that the government will give around $80 million to the prudential regulator APRA to process applications by any of the institutions who want to become eligible for the same guarantee as the banks. What do you reckon about that, Stephen? Is that a band-aid or what?
Well, $80 million would be a drop in the bucket for the issue when there's $31 billion in mortgage trusts.
So yeah, he's only going to pay for their applications if they want to sort of satisfy APRA that, you know, they're ridgy-didge like the banks.
Yeah, look, I see. So this would be more people coming under APRA supervision and therefore becoming formally guaranteed.
Yeah, I think that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, well, I think that probably is a sensible measure, that it's already such a vast guarantee. There are lots of tin pot credit unions around the place that are included, and there's vast multi-billion-dollar mortgage trusts managed by our strongest institution in the country, which aren't. So it makes sense for as many institutions as possible to come under the umbrella. $80 million is a big whack for a bunch of approvals, isn't it?
Yes. Sure. Why is it so expensive?
Yeah, it's approvals. People are well paid, aren't they?
They obviously are. Stephen Mayne's looking slightly, it's not really the worst for wear, Stephen. It's highly unfair. You're usually in here in a suit and you're not today, but you have attended 10 AGMs in 4 working days. You've had chairman crying. You've had an unprecedented protest vote at Transurban. You ended up speaking to Peter Costello, as you said today, at the press club. And James Packer, of course, as well, stepping out of Channel 9. Which of all of those has been the one that has piqued your interest the most?
Well, I think I probably enjoy the Packer jousts the best. So we had two in one day. We had his Casino Crown Casino AGM at 11, and then we had his media AGM at 2. And it was a pretty lively, probably we had about 40 minutes all up, back and forth over the two meetings. And I did enjoy the opening one at the media company, which was, could any director who's read Gerald Stone's book, Who Killed Channel 9, please raise their hand? Because I asked last year and they all said they hadn't read it. And I said, come on.
You've had 12 months.
This book about our great asset being destroyed, you haven't read it. And one director put their hand up rather sheepishly. So, at the end of the day, I also asked James, whether he felt emotional about Channel 9 and whether he, you read the press and some people say he hates Channel 9 and doesn't like the exposure of the media, and others say he's got emotional attachment. So tell us, James, yourself. How do you feel about losing Channel 9, and would you want to buy it back like your dad did off Alan Bond?
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of said, well, look, when Dad bought it back in 1990, it was a much better business, free-to-air. You didn't have the pay TV competition, you didn't have the internet, so it was more attractive then. And, look, yes, he said it was a sad day, but, look, frankly, the business dynamics have changed. And, we just take a sort of a fairly hard-nosed approach. So that sort of, I almost drew that as a never-ever comment, that even if it was offered back at a billion or two rather than the $5 billion that he sold it for.
He's right, though. I mean, the whole situation has changed in terms of free-to-air, in terms of all media right across the world.
Well, we're seeing media companies falling left, right and centre. I mean, Murdoch's shares are down by 70%. Fairfax shares have crashed from $5 to less than $2. They're carrying $2.5 billion of debt. Channel 7's loaded up in debt with private equity. Channel 10's parents loaded up with debt back in Canada. And James Packer's walked away from Channel 9, and CBC somehow trying to pay private equity firm trying to pay $4.2 billion on debt, supporting Channel 9 and the magazines business, and the debt's changing hands at 60 cents in the dollar. So our media companies have very geared balance sheets at the worst possible time, and are in an industry which is being crushed and challenged by new technologies. And James today seemed very happy to have walked away. I got up and said, look, I've got to say, you're a genius for selling that thing for $5 billion. I mean, best deal ever. And I also asked him whether he had any personal debts on his stake in Crown, which is about almost $2 billion, and his stake in the media company, which is $400 million. No debt on either. So that's the third billionaire this season who's come out and said no debt. Frank Lowy came out, well, it was back in May now, but came out and said, yep, my $3 billion, no debt at all. And Rupert Murdoch, 2 weeks ago in New York, my guy got up and said, Rupert, Frank Lowy says he's got no debt, what about you? No debt at all, happily. So the big three all have their controlling interests in their, Westfield, News Corp, Crown, PBL, totally debt-free. Whereas when you go back to the debt crisis of 1990-91, Frank Lowy went under huge pressure buying Channel 10, had way too much debt. Rupert Murdoch almost went broke. Too much debt, and even Kerry Packer had serious debt problems back in 91. So they've all learnt the lessons.
Not so.
And another one I love with James Packer is you get up and you say, and this got a big round of applause, congratulations for working for free. We love the fact that you donate your services just like your father. Please continue this process of not doing it for anything. And then David Lowy is up there on the board today. And, of course, I always go around to, Rupert Murdoch and Frank Lowy and say, why can't you do a Packer? I mean, Rupert, why do you get $30 million a year? And Frank Lowy, why do you get $15 million a year when James Packer works for free? he donates. He's a charity. And of course, David Lowe is sitting on the stage here today as I'm pointing that out. So it's quite good fun. But good on James for doing that. There's no one else I'm aware of who would be entitled to multi-million dollar salary and works for free.
But quite, he doesn't need that salary.
Well, that's right, but Rupert Murdoch doesn't need $30 million a year. In fact, he doesn't need $15 million a year. So no. Good on James for not double dipping, being happy with his dividends.
All right. Tell me the crying incident.
Well, last Thursday, the AWB chairman, Brendan Stewart, who'd done a power of work basically throwing the farmers off the board and having a normal structure, got, you know, bad-mouthed in his hometown. He was a farmer from Queensland, and he delivered a speech after the new constitution had been put in, and he basically broke down and as he was thanking his family. And I've never seen a chairman break down at a meeting. So he had gone through a hell of a battle. Agri-politics, you know, single desk, getting rid of farmers off the board. And, clearly the strain showed. I mean, he did a great job, but it was a very emotion-charged meeting for him to say that. And then last night, another pretty dramatic meeting at Transurban up at the RACV Club, where the chairman, David Ryan, is also the chairman of ABC Learning. And he was, for the last few years, he was chairman of the ABC Learning Audit Committee, and, of course, ABC Learning can't get their audited accounts out. So he suffered a 34% protest vote, which is the biggest ever protest vote against an incumbent chairman in Australian history, last night. And the Transurban Remuneration Report was voted down last night, 59% against, because the last CEO walked out with $16.6 million in his last year. So what we're seeing is a massive backlash against outrageous executive payouts. Borrell's remuneration report was voted down last week. Toll holdings will get done over on Thursday. I'll make a prediction here. And this is a real revolution. And the shareholders just aren't going to take it anymore, the institutions, with these ridiculous pay packets. And even individual directors are now finally getting big against votes. And even James Packer's 2IC, John Alexander, today had 50% of the neutral shareholders vote against him.
Wow.
50%.
So does that mean we'll see changes? Because in the end, those board members, are they elected by the shareholders?
Every 3 years, we're
going to see them kicked off.
You run for election. I don't think the Transurban chairman will survive till Christmas because he just suffered this huge protest vote. And even at Borrell last week, the chairman said at the start of the meeting he was going to run for another 3-year term next year. So he was coming up for 10 years, which most regard as a lot. You're going to do another 3 years. When he was one of the directors at GPT who recommended their deal with Babcock and Brown, which ended up blowing up $3 or $4 billion, I got up and said, come on, you've blown up billions over here. And their remuneration report was voted down, and there's going to be some pressure there about whether he runs again. So you will see directors getting weeded out.
Changing the guard.
Which is a good thing, because it's a fairly narrow gene pool. There's too few doing too much. And still a few 70-something chairs are running again. I mean, the ANZ chairman is 18 years in, doing another 3 years.
Gee, Sue, and this could be your chance, mate. You know, you've been pushing for so many boards for so long.
I'm over 31, Lindy. I'm not expecting to break my duck any time soon.
You never know. It's a new world out there. Hello, Derek.
Not enough women on board.
Exactly,
this is what
that's
we need.
True.
Yes, but if you're in the mood for making predictions, next Tuesday, any idea in the cup, Stephen?
Oh, goodness, I haven't even... I'll go Barack Obama the day after, if that's all right.
Okay, no, that's right.
I don't think you can get very good odds.
It's only a two-horse race.
Yes. Yeah,
that's very true. On this day in 1929 too, Black Monday.
Indeed. Also, yesterday was the last Monday in October. I thought last night will be the bottom for the US market. Mondays in October are a shocker, and we're through it. So it'll bounce in New York tonight, and we're away.
Yes,
we're up.
Unless it's a dead cat.
Exactly.
Someone pointed out in the big paper today, we know that cats have 9 lives, but how many dead bouncers have they got in them?
Well, we've had about 6 so far.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe there are 9. They've got 3 to go. Stephen, thank you very much. See you very soon. Not next Tuesday, because that's Melbourne Cup. We might invite you along. Cricket tomorrow, but I'm here for a short time. I'll see you then.